This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2018, held in Harrisonburg, Virginia on March 2 and 3.
Good morning, and welcome to this session entitled, Where to Find Teachers. Now, I warn you ahead of time, at least I want it to go that way, I want this to be a workshop. And I see some employers here who have workshops, and I don't think they do a lot of the work in the shop. Get it? So I think the work needs to come from back there, and I'll try to be a facilitator. I'm going to open with a few verses from Luke chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, and yes, maybe 3, I'm not sure. See if how I'm led by the time I get there. Just come on in. In Luke chapter 10, I read, "And after these things, the Lord appointed other 70 also and sent them two and two before his face into every city and place whither he himself would come. Therefore said he unto them, The harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few." And I'm making an application there, which I don't think I need to explain any more than that. The harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he would send forth laborers into his harvest. Now, in the context, I debated whether I was going to go on and read verse 3, but I think I will. It says, "Go your way, behold, I send you forth as lambs among wolves." No application to your schools there, okay? Mike Rupp, would you want to lead us in prayer?
Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we come before you this morning. We thank you for this privilege we have to gather together. Yes. Bless Elmer as he leads. Be with us and bless each of our schools and the different responsibilities we have there. And as different schools are looking for teachers, we just pray that you would direct us in this search. With us today, we pray this in Jesus' name.
Amen. Thank you. Probably most of you know that I work for Christian Lake Publications. That's not only my occupation, but it's my passion. Schools, teachers, parents, in getting the word out in how we teach and train our children and how we educate them. That's what puts bread on the table and a roof over my head. But part of that work involves visiting schools, and I get into some of your schools, and as well as teacher training in the summer, both for Christian Light here in Harrisonburg, as well as in other parts of the world. And often when I visit your schools and other school functions, I am asked this question, "Do you know of any teachers that we could hire?" As if I bring them along with me. Presently, we at Slainsville, and my board is represented here, are looking for a teacher. So if you come and ask me for a teacher, I will defer first of all to them. And so if I find of a teacher somewhere along the way, they get first pick. You get the second, third, and the fourth, or however many we find along the way. Now, Christian Light ships boxes of material all over the world, and that's not my topic. But in going to our warehouse, I haven't been able to find a box big enough to ship teachers. I don't have boxes big enough to ship teachers. In addition, we have large web presses, we have copiers, we have all kinds of equipment that duplicate pages of material by the millions, but we have not learned to clone teachers. And so, where do we find teachers? Now, we have also a school catalog, and this is not an advertisement, this is part of my topic, but we have a very comprehensive index in the back, and if you go to that index under teacher, the only thing you're going to find is teacher planner. There's no way here where you can find teachers. Neither can you go across the aisle to Rod and Staff and find it in their catalogs. And so the question is, where do we find our teachers? And that is the big question for today. Where do we find our teachers? We don't have boxes big enough to ship them, even if we could produce them there at Christian Light. So, leaving Christian Light aside now, we want to look at where we can find teachers. I'm going to surprise you with a statement that you may not want to hear or believe. I'm going to start with this statement. There is no teacher shortage. Say it with me. There is no teacher shortage. Now, you've heard yourself say it. You've heard me say it. Does that make you a believer of that statement? So what's the problem? I'm going to look at about five different areas. Number one, we have to keep what we have. Teacher retention is number one. We have to keep what we have. And so we're going to look at that. Now, why did I say there is no teacher shortage? It's based upon this idea. I'm assuming most, if not all, of you teachers have teachers in the classroom presently. Is that correct? Okay, you have your teachers. If we can keep them, then we have enough. Except for the fact that we need to find teachers only for new schools opening up or schools expanding, adding more grades. There is no teacher shortage. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest. And I'm sure you're doing that. I'm not suggesting that you aren't. So, teacher retention. We want to start there. Let's look at ways, and this is where the workshop's going to come in. Let's look at ways in which we can, what are you doing? What can we be doing to retain the teachers that we have? So, the opposite of teacher retention is teacher departures. So let's start there. Why do teachers leave? Yes. That's my number one.
Making more students.
Yes. The number one is teachers getting married and becoming homemakers. And I'm glad that came up first because that is legitimate. We bless that. That's top. So we can't fault that reason for teachers leaving, and it's very prevalent. That's correct, and we need to bless that. I believe the call to motherhood and parenthood is one of the higher callings of life, and so we bless that. Okay, now that's out of the way. What are other reasons why teachers leave?
Need a higher paying job.
Let's put a few things on the table, and then we'll pick them apart. Higher paying job, okay?
They get burned out.
Burned out, okay. Others, burnout.
They don't like it. It's not their cup of tea.
Okay, they don't like it. Wasn't maybe what they thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. We have one that says she wants to go somewhere for service. She realizes teaching is a notable service.
Yes.
But she wants to leave home, the community, and live somewhere else for a year. But she says, don't be scared to ask for back when they
like, wonderful. That is an enlarging thing. If you can get her to come back, she'll come back a better teacher.
Right. Yeah,
just because of the extra that she has gained in that other exposure. Very good. Other. Yes. Yes. That's correct. Other ideas.
Sometimes they're just fired.
Just tired.
Fired.
Oh, fired. Oh. Okay. Board members, we'll have to address that.
There also seems to be a little bit of a mentality that I'm putting my 2 years and I'm done.
Okay, that was my number two one. I'm not. And by the way, the order from here on doesn't really matter. So we have teachers getting married and becoming homemakers. We have teachers feeling that they've served their term. I don't know how many of you, probably very few, in one of the early CASBs in Ohio, in one of the devotionals, the devotional leader said something like this. He said, here in the state of Ohio, we have an institution where people serve their time. But he says it's behind locked doors enclosed by barbed wire fences. There is a certain mentality that teachers feel that I've done my term, I've done my duty. It's maybe a leftover idea in our communities from when teaching maybe actually was a VS opportunity. Comments. Let's take that one apart. Teachers feeling they have served their term. How can we combat that? Does that come back to us as boards? Does that come back? Does it have anything to do with how we hire them? Okay, back to you.
One of the things that bothers me is that I've just heard that from a high school student who's taken our teacher apprentice program. And she was like, well, yeah, I'll be interested in teaching for 2 years, but then she's got ideas going elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. I like what you said there about teacher apprenticing. Let's put that on the shelf. We're going to come back to that. I'd like to hear what the rest of you are doing along that line. In the back.
I think it relates some to the pay issue. If it's viewed as a VS service and the pay is appropriate to VS work, then there's sometimes it's just true light. Like, you have to go somewhere else, even if you did like teaching. I think that should be changed to where teaching is one of the higher paid jobs in the community that's kind of sought after. I mean, they're raising the next generation.
So maybe what you're saying is that we as communities, churches, boards have created the VS mentality by the rate of our pay. Is that what you're saying?
You get what you pay for.
Get what you pay for?
It's one of the factors.
It's one of the factors. Yes. And I have that as well. Not enough pay to survive long term. If we're going to get serious about retention, we're going to have to look long term. And especially to get get men in the classroom, we're going to have to be serious about what we're willing to pay. Yes, Mike.
Something was mentioned about when we hire them, and I'm a business owner as well. And I was talking earlier. We ask our teachers if they're coming back, and I think I would really like to change that so that they're expected to come back until they say no. And I. Maybe you all are doing that.
How many are doing that? It is being done. Yes.
I have a comment about that. I just had an embarrassing moment with one of my teachers that was the way we had it. Okay, so she's here until she tells us she's not coming. Well, she called me the other night. She goes, I guess you as a board still, you know, plan on me to teach? And well, yeah, I mean, somewhere there still needs to be a connection between the board and her, acknowledging that, yes, we're still here. We're still on the same page. So I'll argue that point just a little bit.
Okay. May I make a comment along that line? A couple of years ago, we had talked about that with our teachers as well. And they actually prefer leaving it the way it was that we would actually ask them. They said there is a sense where, you know, they feel wanted and needed if they know
yes.
They ask. But if we just hire them on the basis that we'll keep them until, you know, we no longer need them or get rid of them, they're in limbo. They're not quite sure. Do we want them, or are we just afraid of the results if we say no? You know? So, in other words, to ask them to come back every year, they felt needed and wanted, and they knew that they were wanted there.
Can I take you to and bring those together? Is there a hybrid here where we can go with that system, but each year have a confirmation time where we actually...
Well, I was just impressed in the previous session I was in, we talked about supporting our teachers. And if we have a real show of support and are there and are communicating with them, that should be somewhat of a confirmation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But if we're not doing any of that, then you're going to have the embarrassing situation that I had.
Mm-hmm.
Our school, we in January, put together as a board and write up contracts. And then that's what we hand to our teachers, and that is our way of asking them that. Is that kind of a hybrid or not? But.
Okay, let me get that straight. What you do is you write up a contract whether they're coming back or not.
Yes.
And
well,
you hand...
I had a teacher call me in December and say, don't write me out a contract, because I'm going to VS.
Okay.
But all the rest of our teachers, we wrote out a contract to them.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we're actually going to move up to December because we also do evaluations. And so it's a long evening. We let our teachers write how it's going, how they feel it's going.
Let me bounce that back. When do you ask your teachers?
That's a Christmas gift.
A Christmas gift.
Yeah, we ask ours a little before the Christmas banquets.
Okay. That's been my practice in schools that I've operated. You know, try and give them a Christmas gift that gives them the Christmas vacation to think of it.
The month of January, we ask them that they have word back to us by the 1st of February.
Okay, by 1st of February. What are some of your cutoffs?
We normally ask them in December and want an answer back like after they come back from their Christmas and New Year.
See, this is tough for you boards. I understand that. You know, it's not that long from September to December. The year isn't half over, almost, but and already you need to plan for the next year, but you have to be proactive. You have to get out there, especially. Well, we used to do it this way. We used to say, they'd say, how much time can I have? I said, you can have all the time you want as long as your answer is yes. But if you're going to say no, tell me quickly. Let me flip that. That's good. I taught school for quite a few years and was an administrator. And I used to tell the teachers every year, I said, look, you are making this too difficult. I said, why don't you just plan to be a teacher? I said, I don't fuss over it every year. I mean, when they gave me my contract, I could sign it almost immediately. You know, let's plan that way. We have to get that mindset into our people that's where it's going to go. Now, yes.
Does anyone hire for a multi-year contract?
Anyone?
We have most of our teachers we ask back every year with our high school teacher who's been there for 20 plus years. He has to give us a year's advance notice, I think. Otherwise, we're operating with the understanding that he's going to be teaching for us until he gives us a 1 year notice. And I think we have a similar thing for our principal. Actually, I think the principal might need to give us 2 years notice.
Any more on that as far as, I will say this, if you're hiring a first year teacher, you should put that on the table. Not that you're hiring them for 2 years, but that in our teacher training, I press that. Don't just teach 1 year. 1 year is not long enough. The first year might be rough, but you never have to do that first year over again. Now, I'm not saying you need to contract them for 2 years, but at least get them thinking 2 years or more right from the start. There's another one came up, and I'd like to just address that a little bit, and that is the respect issue. How highly are teachers respected in your community? Is there a desire for the young people coming up to become teachers? Is it respected? Is it valued? What value do we put on their calling, their vocation, and how that all works together? Any comments?
My comment to that is that I'll tie the pay thing together with that one. Very few of us have actually paid our teachers more than the average wage within the congregation. But there's a fundamental thing that happens. Our hearts follow our money, and our money follows our heart. So if we actually pay up here our respect, I mean, we all say we don't want them to teach just for the money, but none of us have really tried it.
We haven't gone over that line yet.
I'm tying those two together.
Yes,
I
yes.
know you're not there, but... I think in our community, I feel like there's been a growth in that area. We still have a long way to go, but those, you know, you'll have young people that have the attitude of putting in their 2 years and young boys especially that have, you know, they just, it's not the thing to do. And yet they might have the talent, the skill set. And so we have to get beyond that. And we have to raise it up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is it's not their fault.
No, no. Let me tell you two stories. I was visiting a certain school, and I won't say in which state, and the principal and I were just talking about this very thing. And he made a comment that I have never forgotten. He said, as long as my 10th and 11th graders or 12th graders can leave school, go out and get a job, and make more than I do as a longtime principal, he said, we won't make any progress. Secondly, a number of years ago, I don't remember for sure, I think it was CMTI and not CASB, I was given the assignment, maybe somewhat similar to this, but it had to do with paying teachers. And so before that, in preparation, I did a survey. Now, it wasn't a scientific survey, but I contacted quite a few teachers, principals, married men. That was the context. And I asked them if they would be willing to share with me confidentially their salaries. And I also asked, how are those salaries, how's that figure brought together? And the one teacher told me that what they do in their school is they take the average of the father's take-home pay and average it, and that's what they pay their teacher. Now, will it surprise you if I tell you that that was the highest paid teacher that I contacted? So that's where that comes together. Someone else? Yes, in the back.
So with the pay issue on that, is it paid for 9 months or 12 months out of the year?
In that survey? In general, okay. My experience was I was paid for 10 months.
For 10 months, okay.
I've always told the teachers that I've been involved with that our salary is an annual salary, but we're going to pay it out over 10. And if you choose to subsidize it, you're more than willing. We're not saying that you need to be employed for us the full 12, but it is a 12-month salary.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Our high school and principal positions, we've made it an option for quite a number of years. If they choose, they can have their salary dispersed on a 12-month basis as opposed to the others are all paid on a 10-month, 9.5.
But does the amount change or are you just dividing it out?
No, we're just dividing it out.
I'm talking about actually changing the amount. If you pay $3,000 a month, are you paying that for 12 months or for 10 months? So that way they don't have to go try to find a job in those 2 months in the summer and some of those things.
In our school, if they're coming back, we make it 12 months so that they, it's like an incentive to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to take your example to the extreme, let's assume that all the men in the church, except for the school teachers, are teaching at public schools. We average their salaries and then give the school teacher 10 months worth of that. That doesn't work the same. I'm getting a bunch of blank looks. So, were you proposing that? I think you were suggesting that it's not that if we actually prorate their pay to 10 months worth of a 12-month salary, that's not appropriate.
Yeah, right. So we pay all of our career teachers 12 months out of the year, but we don't pay them 10 months worth of pay and just divide it over 12 months. We pay them salary. Like, if I hire an employee, I'm going to pay them for 12 months. They get a 12-month salary if they're a career teacher. And so that's what I was suggesting.
Now, it may depend on how they slice it. In my years in the school, they didn't the contract didn't offer per month. It offered the whole lump. This is what we're going to pay you. And then I had a choice of having it divided into 9 months, 10 months, or 12 months. So,
but typically, if you look at those rates, at least from what I've seen, they take the average for the year and then divide that by 12 and multiply it times 10.
Right. And even then, you're saying, and you're correct, if you do it that way, take the average, take it times 10, then divide it out over 12, you're not paying them for a whole year. You're just giving them income in the summer, but they get a cut every month to pay for that summer.
Right. I'm just suggesting, if we want career teachers, if we want people that are willing to do this for our life, they have to have us. There's no job where you can go 10 months, do this job, and then go find another job for 2 months quick over the summer. And like that doesn't work. And so if we want them to be sustainable teachers, it actually has to be a living salary 12 months out of the year.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I have a question about funding your example of the teacher that got paid the average of the men in the congregation. So let's say 3 to 4 fathers it's their children that are being taught by this teacher. So if you have 4 fathers that are supplying the pay for it. It comes up to a quarter of their take-home pay is going to pay the teacher. Is that typically how it works, or how are you going to fund the school to sustain that level of payment?
How do you?
The way we do it is we make the budget for the year with the salaries and everything included. And then at the beginning of the school year, we'll put out a letter to the whole congregation saying, per member of the congregation, the dollar amount average is this much, but it's actually so much per patron average. And so it gives the patron an idea of how much the rest of the congregation is actually helping if he knows he didn't do his part as far as a patron's concerned.
So you're having probably older families who maybe don't even have school children anymore, heavily subsidizing the school.
Even the young people that's out there making a big living on a job.
So let's take that to a small congregation, younger families, not very many older families. How do you make that work?
It's tough.
Keith?
I know public school teachers and Christian day school teachers who have run a landscaping business on the side, grass mowing business. It's just been interesting to observe that the one Christian day teacher, I believe he taught for 10 years, with a commercial mowing business on the side, and did very well. It is incredible financially how he did with that. And I know a couple of public school teachers that every year out of a landscape center, every year they're in there running that. And of course it's really hard for them if, April, May, and August and September, but it's just interesting the men who have a passion for teaching and are willing to subsidize their, and this is public school teaching mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
So in our situation, it's the deacons actually take a pretty good bit of the initiative to fund the school. Bradley, correct me if I'm wrong, we have the school as we agree on a budget per student.
Okay.
So whatever the student count is this year, that's the budget that the school has to work with, and it's enough to pay the teachers what we determine that it should be paid.
Mm-hmm.
And then we let the church or let the deacons kind of carry the load of figuring out how to fund the school. School does some things like auctions and so forth to help bring somebody to the table, but it's largely left up to the deacons to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a quick survey. How many of your schools are tuition-based? How many are offering-based? And how many are a combination? Okay. Let me tell you two stories. The one school, without naming it, they're tuition-based or at least tuition-oriented,
But they start charging tuition. Someone mentioned to the youth, you know, the youth coming up, once they get jobs, they get a prorated tuition, not as much as a family with, you know, children in school. And that tuition never ends. It goes right up to us as grandparents, the whole way through the church. Everyone is buying into the school all year long. That's one way. There's another large community where they actually ask the people for their W-2 forms. And they have a payment schedule according to a tiered W-2. Now, there's one exception. If you do not want to give your W-2, that's fine. We just bump you right up to the top tier. Takes a lot of work, but, you know, I think there's equity there. Mm-hmm. Someone else. We're going to need about two sessions of this to get through. I have 5 points and we're in point number one. But this is good. I do want to go to the next point because I think this is part of the answer. And that is number two. You have to grow your own. You have to grow your own teachers. We're not going to ship them to you in boxes. And I'd like to look at some advantages of growing your own. Brother Jonas mentioned yesterday in Acts 6, it says, look ye out among you and choose some there. Now, of course, this is going to vary to community size. We're a small community, but we were blessed a couple years ago to have entirely local teachers. And we don't have that presently, but that was a good experience. Let me go back to my experience again. As a high school teacher principal, I had a lot of things on my plate. But the school board, for all the years I taught except one, and they couldn't find anyone that year, I had a teacher's aide in my classroom. And that allowed me to do administrative work, and she took some of the classes, I took classes, and so there was two we were co-teaching. The downside for me was that they never left me have a teacher's aide very long. Probably after a year or two, she was given another class, maybe third grade or fourth grade or second grade. But without really putting a lot of intention into it, this was a teacher apprenticing. And some of those teachers still come back to me and say how valuable that was of having that type of apprenticing. Now, if you look out among you, find in your middle school, in your high school, the aptitudes that your students have and build it, grow it. Bring them along to CASB. Bring them along to CMTI and other things. Just get them involved. Do summer teacher trainings. Assign them specialized reading lists. Have them write summaries. Do on-the-job training. Have them teach classes. There's so much that you can do along that line. But you're doing it, so let's hear from you. What are you doing to grow your own teachers? What are some things that you have done that has worked for you? Do any of you have a class as such for teacher training? Good. Do you offer high school credits for teacher training? Yes. Anyone else? And put those hands up again, and you all look around, and these are the brethren you want to talk to and find out what they're doing. Yes?
I have a question. So if we... In our situation, I know there's a girl that's, I'm not sure what grade she's in, but she has interest in being a teacher. So how soon after they graduate do you bring them in? You don't want them teaching their peers.
Okay, I have here also advantages and disadvantages of growing your own, and you opened up the one disadvantage. Now, that depends, too, on the age. Most times, I would have teacher's aides maybe a year or two out of high school, but we would put them into a lower grade. So that usually takes care of the peer problem. I had a bigger problem with my teacher's aides because they were peers with the older students in the class, and that can cause a problem.
I think the biggest blessing for our school is we have a high school teacher that's excited about school, loves his children, loves his students, and... Actually, last year we had to look for another teacher, and I was almost I was kind of looking for somebody on the outside from our community, because the teachers we've had are either been there 10 years or plus, or they...
You're not complaining, are you?
No, absolutely not. They came up through our school system.
Yes.
So we were kind of ready for some new ideas. And it all worked out. We had somebody come in from Alaska. You're looking outside. That's pretty good. But with that, 9 of our youth are currently teaching somewhere. And I think a lot of it goes back to your staff.
Who was it that said longtime teachers? Was that you, Philip? Longtime teachers will bring more longtime teachers. Now, some of the advantages, the big advantages of growing your own, and we'll hear it in the next session, is school culture. School culture is big. How we do things, curriculum is big. If we can't grow our own, you know, sometimes we will hire other experienced teachers. But, you know, this hasn't worked out the best for me. We hired some very experienced teachers in my past experience that took more work on my part than the ones that we grew ourselves. Mainly because of school culture, maybe because of a different curriculum. But you have a point, though, about getting new ideas. And so there are pros and cons. Back to you.
I've also found it very interesting. I get phone calls with some of the schoolwork I do. I get phone calls from different schools saying, I'm looking for a teacher. You know, do you have any leads for me? And I've learned to make the first conversation, have you looked within your congregation? What kind of talent do you have there? Do you have a father? Do you have a father that's taught in the past? And just sort of stimulate that thought process. And I've seen, some fathers in their 30s actually step back into the classroom. And that has blessed schools tremendously. Where they're there, they know the culture, mm-hmm. they have some legacy experience, mm-hmm. And they step back in. And often once they're in their 30s, they're much more committed to long term.
Interesting comment. I was 32 when I went into education. Came out of an auto background, assistant service manager at a Chevrolet dealer, and stepped back into the school. And stayed until I started working for CLE and we moved to West Virginia.
That's not uncommon. And that's a good time to get them, by the way.
You said, were you 30 also or 32?
32. Other comments? Let me just branch into this one. Hire those who are willing to become teachers. And we're out of time, but I'd like to just you can feel free to get up and walk out. I'd like to just look at some things that you can do both to retain your teachers, to train new teachers, to hire from another community and groom a teacher. So what are you doing for teacher prep, teacher training? We need to get on that yet before we close here. What are some things that you have done that worked for you?
We've had him be 8 in first and second or maybe third grade. And it went maybe 2 years. He says, either I'm in my own classroom or I'm out. Well, we made a spot real quick.
Yes. And that's very common. I like that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We were very pleased with that.
Okay. Someone else.
If you're, last year we had a new teacher and she was from out of state and we made it possible so she could go to Faith Builders for the summer term and also the CLE training. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably a minimum.
So are you as boards proactive in that? Are you willing to pay your teachers to do those things? Mm-hmm. You need to be. I think that's very important. I'll just mention briefly our training materials. These are not limited to CLE use. You can buy these out of our catalog. You can do some staff development.
and there's a whole host of things that are available. We have a classroom manual, and again, this is not limited to our use. This thing is chock full, or a handbook for creative teaching. Take some of those ideas. You board members that do staff meetings, maybe you want to have a teaching program, something along that line. It came out of another workshop, and all of a sudden I was inundated there at the stand wondering where they can get this administration manual. COE has this for sale in our catalog, and just a lot of things for school boards, and I could have sold a stack of them, but I wasn't aware that it was going to be mentioned. Section 1, philosophy and structure, administration, leadership, the leader's heart and attitude. That's you. Building a staff, function of the Christian school, and then various appendices. I'll have that over there if you want to look at it, or you can come up here and look at it as well.
The teacher training, could that be taken as a high school elective?
Yes, thank you.
So we and, could even make it required all high schoolers.
Now, we are a COE school which works with 10 light units for one credit. And so we do the same thing with these. If they take three of these, it's a 3/10 of a high school credit. There's things like that that you can do. But I would also invite you to go beyond book learning, maybe give a credit for a few books that they've read, teacher books, that sort of thing that are into preparation. Other questions? What are you doing?
Well, I'll just put this out there. We've had several teachers, one of them fairly long. Well, he's been teaching for 6 years now, I think, and another one who wasn't as long. Both of them kind of dragged kicking and screaming by God to our school. Like they came up through the school, they didn't want to teach. They weren't any good at teaching, didn't interest them at all. But we needed teachers and God put pressure on them. And they ended up
Did God have help?
Well, we asked them. We opened the floodgates, I guess. God bless them. But no, like we asked them. The fellow, we've been asking him every year for 5 or 6 years, and it was just always a flat no. And then this year, well, the year that he started teaching, God put pressure on him, mm-hmm. and he caved. And he's been there ever since, and he's been an excellent teacher.
He's
building a lot of really strong foundations in the early years, and producing students that intermediate and high school teachers appreciate.
That happened for our son Wendell. There was nothing that I wanted more than to have him teach with me, and so the board had asked him, and no, he's not ready. Well, then it wasn't more than a month or two, a neighboring school contacted him. And then it woke him up. But he said, Dad, I have a dilemma. He said, if I teach, I want to teach with you. I don't want to teach over there, but am I obligated to them now? So we'll close that chapter. Anything else? And then we need to get over there for the next session. You've been a very good group. God bless you. Keep talking. Take it back with you, and God bless you. Thank you very much. Oh, fifth point, I think we probably covered sources. I was going to talk, FB, different areas are things here. The doc. I was going to mention the doc. There's a place on the doc for learning where schools can put down wanted teachers.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.